The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, can I speak to Mr. Zaltzman in room 927, please?
R-A-H-O-T...
Come on, pick up, Andy. Come on, Andy.
Hello, Buglers!
Boo-boo!
And welcome to Bugle issue 15 reds, 15 blacks, yellow, green, brown, blue, pink, black. It's a maximum 147. Or for those tragically unacquainted with snooker, Bugle issue 1960s German postal van made by Volkswagen. Or Bugle issue number of times US President Calvin Cool Stuff Coolidge karate chopped through the Oval Office desk in his 5.5 years as president. He was easily startled and he hated flies. I'm Andy Zaltzman, live in Chennai, southeast India, looking out over a Bugle record number of palm trees. Only a record because of the excessive logging that took place in Wapping in the 1950s. And in New York City, USA, it's the human lawnmower himself, John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Well, Andy, I mean, on one hand, it's great to be back doing the Bugle. On the other hand, it has been a terrible week. And... Andy, it turns out that you picked an excellent time to fly to the other side of the world, not watch any news for a fortnight, and instead watch a cricket ball get thrown and hit around a lot. You truly could not have picked a better time to hibernate from the world by curling up in the comforting womb of sport. This was excellent, excellent timing, both on your part and on the part of the International Cricket Committee.
Yeah, I mean, they've not got everything right over there. Checkered history,
yeah.
ICC. But they've absolutely nailed this one full in the natches.
And because someone, Andy, who thinks that cricket is the most boring, not only sport, but human pastime in the history of the planet, would have found themselves begging to watch it this week rather than watching the news at any point over the last 7 days. So before we dive into the depressing pond of horror that is current affairs, have you personally had a fun couple of weeks, Andy? Has it been fun over there?
It's been excellent, John. Spent a couple of weeks with my wife and kids in Sri Lanka. I took my 2 and 4 year old children to their first ever cricket game amidst utterly bonkers Sri Lankan fans. You know, cricket has this image in Britain of being a rather genteel, quiet pastime, enjoyed mostly by pensioners waiting to die in deck chairs. And you got to watch it in Sri Lanka, India, or Bangladesh, as I have been. It is a sport watched by absolute lunatics. My daughter, who was just about old enough to work out what was going on, spent the whole day just looking at her book and drawing pictures on stuff. Apart from when her 4 or 6 was it, and everyone around her jumped up and started dancing around, and she would then just jump up and dance around, and then sit back down and read her book again. So I fear that she doesn't fully appreciate the nuances of the game yet, John. But she'll get
it's
there.
Not just about 4s and 6s, Andy. It's not about that. It's about good defensive strokes as well.
But yesterday I was at the momentous England-West Indies game in which England snatched victory from the jaws of defeat, having previously shoved their own victory into those jaws, which previously had been chundering both defeat and victory out simultaneously. And I was summoned in the mid-session interval to go on Test Match Special, which is the
BBC's
radio cricket coverage.
Is that true?
Yeah. So they just said, can you come on in 20 minutes and talk to Aggers? So Aggers being the stalwarts radio cricket commentator. So I went on, and this is a programme I've been listening to for 30 years, since I've been a conscious human being. Test Match Special has basically been the internal and external soundtrack of my existence. So, and I was on it. I've joined the likes of John Arlott and Brian Johnston. Now, Andy Zaltzman could be added to that, and hopefully, I think I might have, I wasn't too infantile by my standards, but I think, I hope I was the most infantile person they've had on that show.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
History. Yeah. But it did, I've been traveling, I think I mentioned on the last Bugle, I've got this little woolen WG Grace figure that my sister knitted me, the iconic 19th century man who transformed modern cricket. And I've been taking it around, and the benefit of doing this radio thing is I managed to get photos of W.G. Grace, my cuddly little W.G. Grace, with former England legend Jeff Boycott, who is an iconic figure in English cricket, a broad and patriotic Yorkshireman who was had a stellar career, renowned for the ceaseless negativity of his batting. And so I gave it to him. I said, can I take a photo of you with this? And he looked at me and said, you are kidding me. So anyway, eventually agreed to do it. And so I handed it to him and he sort of looked at it and posed for a photo. And I said, oh, well, I think you scored more hundreds than W.G. Grace. And he said, I bloody know I did. I know exactly how many more than him I scored. And I did not cheat as much as he did.
He is easily riled. And he's a cantankerous man.
Well, he did it all with good boycotty and humour. But I was standing there thinking, I am an Oxford-educated 36-year-old father of two. And I'm handing one of my country's greatest ever sportsmen a cuddly woolen doll to hold for a photograph. So is my life going A, very well, or B, very badly? And I still haven't worked out the answer to that, John.
A! A! I was down in Texas for the last few days, in Houston, Dallas, and then in Austin for the festival South by Southwest, or SXSW, as they insist on abbreviating it, or the popular moniker South By, for those who can't be bothered to speak accurately or who lack the energy or the common decency to use the English language properly. And when I was in Dallas, Andy, I went to visit the Book Depository there, a place which was mainly justifiably famous for its impressive bookstoring capacity, until someone broke strict Book Depository rules and leant out of a window and shot President Kennedy in the head. Something that obviously and understandably earned that man a lifetime ban from the building, because they had very strict rules at the Texas School Book Depository in 1963, Andy, and they were on a sign that was clearly nailed to the wall. It was no eating, no drinking, no storing pornographic materials, no shooting presidents from the windows, and absolutely no smoking. And incredibly, it's thought that Lee Harvey Oswald broke at least one of those rules, Andy. Possibly even two or three. He was a man who, to put it mildly, did not know how to behave in a book depository.
There was a man a mafia man on the grassy knoll that day, reading porn and smoking. So that's the
irony. The museum there is very interesting. One of the slightly ghoulish things they've done is they've put two X's in the middle of the road outside where the two bullets hit the president, which means the people have a clear choice. You know, do you A, stand respectfully at the side of the road and pay your respects to an awful day in American history, or do you B, dodge oncoming traffic and strike a pose on one of the X's for the camera held by one of your friends? Now, which do you think was the more popular piece of behaviour, Andy? I'll just give you a quick clue. It wasn't A. I even saw a father at one point, holding up his daughter's cuddly... It's kind of like a W.G. Grace situation, Andy. He was holding up his daughter's cuddly toy in front of the camera in the middle of the road. Now, I think he was one of those touring businessmen who would take his daughter's toy out on road trips so he could take photos of them in interesting places. But was this an appropriate place, Andy, for a stunt like that? Or maybe he was just trying to use the toy to demonstrate to his daughter the crushing realities of life by showing her major world assassination sites. Here's Mr. Fluffles in Dallas, where President Kennedy was shot twice in the head. Now here's Mr. Fluffles on the balcony of the Lorraine Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee, where Martin Luther King was murdered. Oh, look, darling, Mr. Fluffles is sad. And here's Mr. Fluffles in New Delhi, where Gandhi was pointlessly slain. Poor Mr. Fluffles can't really seem to come to terms with the gravity of that moment, can he? The point is, sweetheart, bad things happen to good people. Now, sweet dreams, don't let the bed bugs bite. Which they do. They feed off human skin cells. Nighty night.
You're going to make a great dad, John. A great dad.
Can't wait, Andy. I'm ready to go.
As always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin. This week, on the 100th anniversary of its publication in 1911, We have an exclusive serialisation of the classic work of academic research into the psychological science of irritation, entitled Brain Drilling, the Provocation of Well-Brewed Incandescence as a Means to Personal Enrichment, by Professor L.M. Scroulette. This week, chapters on how to ensure a seat on a crowded train by pretending to be French, how to earn a free dinner in a restaurant by threatening to play the oboe, and how to reduce a prison sentence by the determined repetition of chicken impressions. As valid today as they were when they were first penned 100 years ago.
Top story this week, the contest. Well, it's hard to know how to sum up the last 2 weeks of living on this planet, and Andy and I briefly talked about it and concluded that the only way of explaining it is that we are currently living in the middle of an elaborate contest between mankind and nature to see who is the biggest arsehole. Both sides are putting forward pretty powerful arguments for being the bigger dick, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to argue with either of them. I guess one way to get the sheer scale of just how bad the news is at the moment would be like this. Andy, I think I'm suddenly starting to look forward to the royal wedding. That is how bad things are. That level of distracting nonsense is all of a sudden very enticing. In fact, they really need to ratchet up this wedding a notch now. They're not just distracting Britain from our disastrous economy, they're distracting the entire planet from the world of shit that we're currently wading in. Never mind. Never mind, Andy, the cost-cutting measures and Kate Middleton travelling in a car rather than a gold carriage. That's over now. What we now need is for her to be travelling not only in a golden carriage, but a golden carriage that's hanging from the bottom of a golden helicopter before driving through the streets on a golden hovercraft. Anything less, and they're going to allow people to start staring into the abyss again. We need something big and something shiny, and we need it now. Finally, the royal family are relevant again.
It's been an absolute titanic tussle, John, and just when you think mankind has worked its way back into the lead as the biggest tool versus nature, nature pulls another piece of dickery out of its capacious nutsack. I mean, this we had Gaddafi versus plate tectonics. It's been like the Federer-Nadal 2008 Wimbledon final, but more so, and with a similar sense of deepening gloom at the tennis. At least that gloom was merely due to the British evening, not an inescapable chasm of despair. And we had the nuclear scare in the F*** you mankind nuclear plant in Japan. And I've said it before, and I will say it again. I f***ing hate the Earth's crust. I mean, I know it's not all bad, John, but it can be a real prick when it wants to be. Selfish, inconsiderate, always doing what it wants to do without thinking of the effect on others. It's like a badly behaved two-year-old after a disappointing Christmas. And this millennium has already seen way too much of Mother Nature really letting herself down as a parent. And if the authorities had any balls, they would take all of her 7 billion children straight into care. She clearly hates most of them.
Well, that's it. This is not the first time you've said it, Andy. Regularly on the Bugle, you have said vocally that you are not a fan of tectonic plates. And I'm guessing that nothing has won you round on that score recently. Tectonic plates are complete arseholes, and nature has a lot to answer for there. Clearly some big arsehole points, in fact, going to nature regarding the events in Japan. But let's also award a few arsehole points to mankind as well for building nuclear reactors right on top of those tectonic plates. Quite a collaboration between the worst parts of nature and humanity there, Andy. Quite a depressing duet. But another way to sum up just how big the news has been would be this. When was the last time you heard the word Egypt mentioned in the news? That revolution there was only just over a month ago. Has a revolution ever so quickly fallen out of the headlines? They must have thought a month ago, wow, this is a pivotal moment in world history. People are going to be talking about us for years. Hold on a second. Why is that camera crew packing their stuff up? Where the f*** are they going? Now, obviously, the events in Japan have dominated the news all week, and our thoughts are with any buglers who are in Japan at the moment, some of whom have been kind enough to email us to let us know how they're doing. And initially, the Japanese government had seemed encouraging with the news that they were releasing about the problem nuclear reactors, but that quickly started to change. In fact, I think it was around the time that the world started to see pictures of them dumping tons of seawater onto the reactors to desperately try to keep them cool that people thought, oh, I think this might actually be a serious problem, because it doesn't seem like desperately dumping seawater onto open reactors would have been in the initial top 10 emergency responses. That's the kind of plan that I would think of, and I am, in a very real sense, not a nuclear physicist.
I think the particular problem with these tectonic plates, John, is when nature starts treating them as if they're plates at a Greek wedding. And that's the main problem. But action clearly has to be taken, and Germany is leaping forward. Chancellor Angela Merkel has pledged that her country will ditch nuclear power entirely and also seek to phase out all nucleuses by the year 2023. Merkel said, nucleuses cannot be trusted. They're clearly not safe. They're up to no good. We don't need them. Think about it. When did you actually last use a nucleus and really use it deliberately, not accidentally? It was a long time ago, wasn't it? Now think of when you last used that pastry cutter shaped like Nancy Reagan's patoot. Not often, but more recently than you've used a nucleus. Point proved. Danke. Guten f***ing tag.
The scenes really have been truly shocking coming out of Japan. Primitive-looking rural houses being crushed by water, high-rise buildings in cities physically swaying from side to side. Japan has always been a country living simultaneously in both the future and the past, with almost no areas living in the present. And never has the line between those two seemed so clear. But on the mankind side, Colonel Gaddafi has been acting as the captain of the team determined to take on nature for the title of deadliest douche. He has managed to behave so terribly that yesterday the UN announced plans to back a no-fly zone over Libya, as well as all necessary measures, short of an invasion, to protect civilians and civilian-populated areas. In New York yesterday, the 15-member body voted 10 to nothing in favour with 5 abstentions. And that is pretty impressive for Gaddafi, Andy. He managed to force the UN to act. And as a rule, they generally don't like to take any kind of decisive action whatsoever. You have to be so hugely vocally and visibly despotic to get them to even table a discussion about you that many wannabe despots have just got bored and given up trying. If you can get the UN to do anything at all, you have truly excelled as a whack job.
Yep, like the platinum caliber mega that he is, and I can call him that because I can use someone else's oil, I'm fine, I don't need him. He's been treating his own people to some of the finest technology the West has to offer, and sadly, that has not been free plasma screen televisions. And the UN, at last, as you say, has stopped battering its snooze alarm on this one. Initially sent an email to Gaddafi telling him they were, quote, in a real huff with him, and, quote, narked off and a bit miffed about how he was brutalising his people. But they've now decided that he has definitely crossed that line between valued customer stroke cut price petrol pump and certifiable nut job stroke malignant tumour. And I mean, it is so hard to tell the difference in top level politics these days. So they have passed a resolution saying, Gaddafi, you're a naughty boy, you are grounded. Literally, no treats and no flying. And I mean, it seems to have worked. They just literally minutes before we started recording this. In fact, whilst I think I was receiving my daily cup of chai from room service. I'm blending in seamlessly, John. Libya's said that he's going to halt military action, although, you know, this boy has cried wolf quite a lot of times in the last 40 years. But anyway, the no-fly zone seemed right to me, rather like telling Manny Pacquiao in a fight with Rick Moranis that he's only allowed to hit Moranis with his left hand and not his right. Moranis is still going to have his face pumped in. So we'll have to wait and see whether it will help the rebels enough.
The plan seems to be, apparently, I was reading this morning, that the British and the French will initially take part in the first airstrikes, if necessary, with logistical backup from Arab allies. So, just the British, then. That's what I take away from that, Andy. We're going to be basically doing that on their own. The French will be behind, but quite a long way behind, on the ground in Paris behind. Surely before the vote, Colonel Gaddafi told Portuguese television, if the world is crazy, we will be crazy too. Before going on to say, oh, also, if the world isn't crazy, we will still be crazy anyway. What I'm essentially saying is, we are f***ing crazy. And, of course, when I say we, I mean me. Me and the voices in my head are f***ing crazy. I have one more thing to add. Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Offered an amnesty to the rebels, which, again, I'm not sure you'd necessarily trust him. He did, to be fair to him, have the decency to put on a big bad wolf costume and dress as someone's granny whilst he was making that offer. So he was sort of laying his cards on the table. But we're kind of constrained in what we can do in the West, particularly America and Britain, because We rather nailed our wang to the coffee table with Iraq, and now A, our wang is sore, and B, no one else trusts us when we start fiddling with the zip on our trousers and asking them whether they wouldn't mind moving that large but obviously unread book of very lovely aerial photographs of the world. So I guess the lesson is, don't nail your wang to coffee tables unless you're absolutely 100% sure that the owner of the coffee table wants to use your dongle for a coaster, as Mahatma Gandhi himself once said.
It really has been a hugely depressing week, but there have been some people who have tried valiantly to cheer everyone up in their own way, which leads us to Hugo Chavez news now. Hugo Chavez, Andy, must have been sitting at home in Venezuela this week watching the news and thinking, what can I do? What can I, Hugo Chavez, do? I just feel so powerless. I guess the only thing I can do is what I'm truly great at, and that is distracting people from their pain by being absolutely ridiculous. So that's what he did, and he made a television address on state TV over last weekend, and when people were perhaps expecting a speech solely on Japan or the events in the Middle East, Chavez subverted those expectations by instead using the speech to rally the country and come out very strongly against breast augmentation operations. See, Andy, the world expected him to zig, and yet again, he zagged. He said that blame for the boom in such surgeries rested with doctors who convinced some women that if they don't have big bosoms, they should feel bad. He said it was a monstrous thing that poor women were seeking breast lifts when they had trouble making ends meet. What is this, friend? He exclaims to his viewers. And he's got a point, Andy. He's definitely got a point there, but could it not have waited slightly? It seems like an odd time to bring it up now, the way the world is. But I guess it was just on his mind. Now, he is such a fan of the natural WAP, and now that's not exactly a crime. He said that among the thousands of letters he receives a week from supporters, one arrived asking for his help for a breast lift, which cost as much as $7,000. He said, of course, I had to reject it. But it would have been amazing, Andy, if he didn't reject it. If he just forced the state to pay for one woman's breast operation, they would then surely become the people's rack, a symbol of synthetic strength for the country to rally behind. Classic propaganda. I can just see a picture of him standing next to her on a balcony, wearing a bikini in the colours of the Venezuelan flag. The woman, that is, not Chavez. Or actually, it would look even better if both of them were wearing Venezuelan bikinis, and both of them had huge norks. Believe me, Andy, if Stalin had had access to that technology, there would have been a Russian lady with huge boobs touring the country, trying to inspire the peasants to work harder. You know, it was a very nice gesture from Chavez to try and cheer everyone up, but, you know, even this issue of breast augmentation is genuinely a serious issue in Venezuela, so even he couldn't bring himself to go fully trivial this week, so we needed something even stupider to cheer us up. London Olympics news now! Well, the London Olympics tickets went on sale this week, Andy, and the Olympic countdown clock in Trafalgar Square started, then stopped. Almost immediately, less than 24 hours later, the display became stuck on 500 days at 7 hours, 6 minutes and 56 seconds, and stayed that way for an estimated 6 hours. Good start, Andy! Solid start! That is not a positive omen for how we are going to handle these games. And it's pretty solid, Andy, pretty solid slapstick, that, a stuck countdown clock, pretty stupid. But, you know, it still doesn't completely cheer me up. You know, they could have, I guess, turned it backwards a couple of weeks instead to a time before all this awful news started happening, Back to the Future style. But not a terrible effort. Donald Trump also tried to cheer the world up, first by announcing that he's going to run for president, which is a stupid idea by any stretch of the imagination. Then he announced he was willing to spend $600 million of his own money on it, which makes it instantly even stupider. And he even announced this by saying, well, that's one of the nice things. I mean, part of the beauty of me is that I'm very rich. And that's almost his first presidential slogan right there, Andy. Part of the beauty of me is that I'm very rich. Trump 2012.
What a jack-up line to an entire nation.
That is exactly what it is. Part of the beauty of me is I'm very rich. Trump 2012. Can I buy you all a drink?
I don't know if you're trying to trying to get into 300 million people's pants simultaneously. You know, that is a strong start.
There are worse ways to chat a country up. He went on to say, you know, the funny thing is, I don't actually get along with rich people. I get along with the middle class and the poor people better than I get along with rich people. Wow. You must really not get along with rich people then, because everyone else thinks you are a colossal tool. Trump then handily put the cherry on the crazy cake when he expressed a bit of doubt over whether President Obama was actually born in the United States. He said, "The reason I have a little doubt, just a little, is because he grew up and nobody knew him." So what better way to launch your presidential campaign, Andy, than to accuse the president of not being American in the face of all evidence to the contrary? So, you know, let's all credit Trump for trying to bring a bit of bright side to the darkness this week. It's particularly surprising then, Andy, that the hardest I laughed all week while looking at the news was actually thanks to Al-Qaeda, who aren't known for their effortless comedy. I personally find their signature slapstick style a little overblown and in questionable taste. But get this, not content with launching an English language magazine that debuted a feature, How to Make a Bomb in the Kitchen of Your Mom, Al-Qaeda's media wing...
Isn't that a Sum 41 song?
If it wasn't, it will be. Al-Qaeda's media wing has followed up with a magazine for women, mixing beauty tips with lessons in jihad. It's a glossy magazine. It's a glossy magazine, Andy. 30 seats already. It already kind of warms your heart, this. That shows how bad things are, that this is the thing that restores your faith in humanity. It's a glossy magazine, 31 pages, and it's called Al-Shamika, which translates loosely as The Majestic Woman. On its cover, it features a niqab-clad woman posing with a submachine gun. And well, sounds like a glamorous cover shoot, Andy. Any fundamentalist woman would be proud to model for that. Of course, it's just a shame that none of her family and friends would believe her when she said that it was actually her.
Can I just pick you up?
Sorry, go on.
This mixing of beauty tips with lessons in jihad, that is an unorthodox combination. I thought, like ordering a dessert in a restaurant and being brought a bowl of chocolate ice cream and freshly slaughtered puppy.
My favourite parts of this, though, were the details inside the magazine. Much like Elle or Cosmopolitan, it has advice on finding the right man, with an article called Marrying a Mujahideen. And I do hope the first piece of advice there, Andy, is make sure he has up-to-date life insurance, followed by don't get too emotionally attached to him.
Also had advice on how to achieve a perfect complexion. Apparently the advice for that is stay inside with your face covered. So, the magazine also discussed the benefits and disadvantages of honey face masks, which, I guess if you're staying inside with your face covered, might be considered an unnecessary luxury. And also warned its readers against toweling too forcibly. And at last, Al-Qaeda has, in some regard, at least, come out as opposed to excessive force, even if it's only in toweling. Maybe from humble acorns, great oaks of peace may grow.
Their beauty tips, Andy, turn out to be basically exactly the same as their answer to any female problems. Stay inside with your face covered. Trouble with your skin? Stay inside with your face covered. Feeling depressed? Stay inside with your face covered. Any ideas for vacations? Stay inside with your face covered. What to do if you think he's cheating? Stay inside with your face covered.
Apart from the really bad news, it hasn't all been good news, John. Just read a report today saying that life expectancy in the UK is rising. And, you know, with the world as it is, this is more fucking bad news. You know, this is the last thing we need. You know, it's now in Britain 78.4 average life expectancy for men. So I've got 41.9 more years of this shit to go. That's not what I want, John. When is my government going to start taking action to reduce my life expectancy instead of forcing me to spend longer and longer in my rocking chair waiting to die?
Got to more cricket, catches, Andy.
John.
Think of it that way.
Yeah. And quickly back to the royal wedding for more good news, some latest updates on the plans for that. As revealed exclusively on the Bugle Twitter feed, at Hello Buglers, Prince William is to sing his marriage vows as a duet with R&B megastar Usher. His best man will be former world snooker champion Ray Reardon, the oldest royal best man in history, the age of 78. Kate Middleton will enter Westminster Abbey by paragliding in through a stained glass window, fulfilling a childhood fantasy, and firing a T-shirt cannon into the congregation. The Queen has announced that her wedding present for William and Kate will be, quote, the power of life and death over all pensioners in Britain, up to a maximum of 100 slayings per year. And the palace has also announced the official caterers will be Bertie's Big Ribs, who will airdrop barbecue ribs across Britain as soon as the ceremony is over.
Andy?
Yeah.
Can I just mention, this morning, about 6 in the morning, I was enjoying a nice sleep, like I think most people would be at that time.
As well, is your right to do, Chris.
You'd have thought so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And my phone rang, which was a little bit inconvenient. I thought it was on silent, but I went up, and it rang out just as I got to my phone. And then I crawled back into bed, and then my phone beeped again to tell me I had an answer phone message. And I picked it up, and it was kind of garbled. I couldn't really make out what it was. And I went to bed. I sort of dozed for about 40 minutes and got up much earlier than planned. And then I sort of, over my breakfast, I looked at the phone code and saw it was unusual. And I Googled the dialing code. And the dialing code was 0091.
Oh, right.
Does that ring any bells, Andy?
No.
Hold on, let me just do that now. Is that... Hold on. That's an Indian dialing code, Andy.
No! How did that happen?
Busted, Andy! Busted!
Right. I'll tell you how that happened. I've been given a BlackBerry to use whilst I'm in India. And it seems to be impossible to get the switch itself off. I can only apologise on behalf of my new country. So thanks for your emails, including one from Steve Rovinsky in Tokyo, who says that he spent the time since the earthquake surviving on the Bugle, Tom Waits, Frank Zappa, broccoli and Stolichnaya vodka.
Wow.
I don't think you need to wait for an earthquake for that combination to keep you going in life.
That's quite a combination.
So we hope things are not too terrible over there. This email comes in from Sophie, who writes, Dear Andy, Chris and John, in order of proximity to the animal kingdom. Again, you have to say whether that is ascending or descending. It is our sad duty to inform you that the Carpathian brown bear is not a fan of your highly esteemed show. Said creature left a pile of excrement outside our cottage where we were staying in Transylvania, and unfortunately, we cannot confirm that we were not listening to an episode of The Bugle at the time. So I guess, to the old question, do bears shit in the woods? Yes, especially if they're listening to The Bugle. She continues, the reaction of mice is even worse. Every single specimen has committed suicide by drowning, 4 times in buckets of water, once by gnawing the top off a bottle of oil and jumping in.
Wow, not a fan.
That's good. Deer seem to like The Bugle, as they hang around the place quite a lot. We aim to discuss the opinion of other wildlife by playing the bugle at the forest as soon as the weather permits in our effort to share the joys of listening to your podcast with other species living on our planet.
I'd be very careful doing experiments like that. You might have PETA come down on you pretty hard, pretty quickly. We have a phenomenal email as well come from Phil Mannion. Who says, gentlemen, several months ago I uploaded a video of Andy's run of puns about Lou Reed's proposed concert for dogs to YouTube. I don't know. I was in a low place, I suppose. Yeah, that sounds pretty self-aware. Anyway, he says, it got the amount of views one might expect. There are a few comments from fellow buglers, including a f*** you, Chris, obviously. But that was it. Then, a few days ago, I got an email from YouTube telling me that my video was eligible for some kind of adverts thing where, if I signed up, they'd actually give me money. Wow, I thought, those guys are getting desperate. Again, that is a healthy instinct. But it prompted me to have a look at the video for the first time in a while and was amazed to see it had over 20,000 hits. For comparison, another Bugle vid I put up, the Mickey Prankbrush story, which, in my opinion, is several hundred thousand times funnier, what with it not having loads of puns in it, has only 250 views. What could be happening? I thought. Well, let me share with you the last few comments that have been placed there. I quote, WTF. I was watching porn and it made me go here. WTF.
Next one. Dude, this is sick! Exclamation mark. LOL. The third one.
That's
hard to say. It's a grey area. Third one. Clicked on a link on a porn site and it took me here in a new window. Creepy. At the time of writing, YouTube has removed the first comment mentioning porn, but the second is still there. Can this possibly be true? Is someone out there really directing people at their most crucial moment to a video of Zoltzman's soul-sapping wordplay? The idea is almost too monstrous to contemplate. I googled the video link but didn't find anything that could explain this. I hope it's some sort of hoax, and I will, of course, share any financial rewards that come my way. Yours in horror, Phil Mannion. Wow. Andy, you are that not just you. That clip is the opposite of pornography.
Well, I've actually been contacted by the Catholic Church, who've asked if they can use my puns in a forthcoming abstinence campaign. So, you know, people say they're pointless, but, you know, clearly they're helping to control the spread of sexually transmitted diseases and unwanted pregnancies. That's all I've ever wanted from comedy, is to reduce the number of people having sex and masturbating. That is all anyone can ask for out of a comedy career.
You're like a linguistic Mother Teresa.
So do keep your emails coming into thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. Sport now, and well, if you want to find out about the cricket, then read my blogs on Cricinfo and my cricket Twitter feed, Zolt's Cricket, and frankly, I'm a bit cricketed out, so I'm not going to talk to you about it now. Although on Sunday, John, I'm going to see India play West Indies here in Chennai, and Sachin Tendulkar, India's greatest ever cricketer, has now scored 99 international hundreds, and so there is a possibility I'll see him score his 100th international hundred, at which point India will probably explode with excitement. And no one will ever do this again, the way cricket is going. And I guess for Americans, I'd say, maybe if you'd been there in the hypothetical event that Babe Ruth had smashed his 1,000th home run into the New York skies, then slapped himself on the tummy and said, chops time. I guess it would basically be like that.
Nicely put.
So do follow whether that's going to happen on my live cricket Twitter updates. That's it for this week's Bugle. From Chennai and New York, the forecasts to conclude this week's Bugle is, will there be a full Bugle next week? John, what do you reckon?
Yes.
I reckon no, because I'm going to be sitting in a cricket stadium in Dhaka in Bangladesh. Possibly, but now unlikely, involving Bangladesh watching its own team in a quarter-final, which could be more mayhem than a single human being can take. So no Bugle next week, but we'll put something out instead to ease your gloom in this murky time for the human race. Bye-bye.
Have a nice week, Buglers. Bye-bye.